I found a sense of purpose. I want to be proud of something. I want her to be proud of me. And I want to be able to do something that, you know, that really makes a difference.
From Haymakers for Hope, this is Not Every Fight Ends at the Bell.
Haymakers for Hope exists to knock out cancer the only way we know how, fighting for a cure through charity boxing.
Thanks to generous supporters and more than 1,200 ass-kicking do-gooders, Haymakers has raised over $25 million for cancer research, care, awareness, and survivorship. But the march towards a cure continues long after the last bell of each event.
I'm Julie Kelly.
I'm Todd Buster Paris.
We know firsthand because we are not just your hosts, we are also survivors.
On this podcast, we will highlight the stories of fighters, survivors, organizations, and supporters. Not every fight ends at the bell.
Round one. Hello, and welcome to Not Every Fight Ends at the Bell. I am co-host of the podcast and co-founder of Haymakers for Hope, Julie Kelly, along with my co-host, Todd Paris. Today's guest, we have Rock and Rumble 13 boxer, Ben Heller, who is fresh off his midway sparring against his opponent, which happened yesterday morning. Ben, thank you for joining us.
Thank you. Great. I'm really happy to be here.
We're going to just really start right in. What is driving you to step in the ring to in the fight against cancer?
That's a pretty simple question that has a pretty complicated answer. I'm trying to think of where it begins. You know, like everybody, cancer has hit close to home with me. Lost my father almost 10 years ago, 10 years in July. My mother's a breast cancer survivor. And my partner at work passed away Christmas Eve of 2020. So I've had some really close people in my life, and there's too many to count, who have passed away or battled cancer. And close as those people are, my wife is dealing with metastatic breast cancer right now. And it's really close to home. It's in the home. It's all of our lives. And I've got three teenage children, and our world has been rocked. It's a helpless feeling. My wife is incredible. Amanda is incredibly strong and resilient and has not let this define her. I sort of happened upon boxing. I was trying to keep going, you know, with normal activities with my kids. There was a boxing gym, FA Boxing, opened up in our neighborhood, and we kept driving by it, stopping for Dunkin' Donuts next door. And I said, I want to go in. My 16-year-old daughter wanted to go in with me. And so we went in and just did a session in there. And then we went in again. Then I kept going when her lacrosse season started, and I'd really enjoyed it. And I had heard of Haymakers for Hope, but I hadn't really paid much attention to it. I had donated to a couple boxers before. I didn't realize the magnitude of the event. And I started looking into it, and Sione, my trainer, said, you should do this. You can fight. I just turned 49. This isn't the time that most people pick up a new violent sport, but it's been awesome. I just having a purpose. This doesn't make my wife's fight any easier. It takes maybe some of the attention away from her, which, you know, can be good, but also can be bad. I don't want to be the center of attention here. She's going through what she's going through. And here I am out fundraising, and I'm fundraising hard. I don't want it to be about me, but I found a sense of purpose. I want to be proud of something. I want her to be proud of me. And I want to be able to do something that, you know, that really makes a difference. You know, I think it's a unique thing. It's not to take away from the other charitable organizations that are all important. You know, riding a bike from Western Mass to the Cape is not something that I'm prepared to do, but people do it year in and year out and run marathons. And but this is, you know, I look at this as a really unique challenge, standing in a ring. And yesterday, that's the first time I've ever been in the ring with nobody else other than the opponent and a ref. It's always been with other people. And
Ben, before we get too far, because I'm really interested in that and how you felt your halfway spar went, I want to back up a little bit to your connection to the cause. You lost your father 10 years ago. Your mother's a breast cancer survivor. How long ago did she have breast cancer?
25 years ago, and it lasted a few years. But it was right after I got out of college. My first few years out of college, I felt like that's what we were dealing with. Mm-hmm.
So 20-something years ago, then 10 years ago, and now your wife, Amanda. So that's a timeline that's got to be, like you said, pretty close to home. Mm-hmm. When did you guys discover, or how did that all come to pass that Amanda realized she had breast cancer?
Yeah, it's, you know, another one of those things that COVID has such a major impact on everything in our lives. Amanda had a routine mammogram. She has some family history of breast cancer. So she started her mammograms a little younger than is recommended. But she had one scheduled for, I think it was December of 2019, and canceled it because of weather. And she had a, you know, some coincidence. She canceled it and said, I'll just do it next year.
Of course.
And my timeline might be a little off. But anyhow, so she canceled it. And then it was going to do it next year. And they called and said, we have an appointment sooner. Do you want to come in? And she did it. And they found a lump. And no, she easily would have just put it off for a year. And it might have been too late. And if she had a regular appointment, it might have been too early. It was a really small little lump. The bad news followed, and they removed it. Chemo, radiation, and then great news. You're clean. And that was after 9 months of treatment. You know, we got the all clear, and we were really happy. And we're living our life. It was in the rearview mirror. I hadn't really thought about it because my context was worried about my mother. Like, it was like, okay, she took care of it, did the same treatment, and now here we are 20-something years later.
So, Ben, in the thought process of my mother had it, she beat it, my wife has it, she'll beat it. Like, it wasn't even a sort of question.
Yeah, I never, the reality of it didn't hit home because it was very similar to my mother's story. And my wife is an extremely strong person. The treatment has come so far in 20 plus years. We live right near Dana-Farber. It's like, and fast forward a year, we're on the beach. Amanda was having a hard time with balance. Her right foot was not doing what it's supposed to be doing. Her flip flop was coming off. She was tripping on the threshold and the doorway, on the bricks, on the streets in Nantucket. And she knew something was wrong. I thought it was something unrelated. And she got it checked out when we got back. And lo and behold, she had a tumor in her brain that was affecting her right foot mobility. And immediately went in for brain surgery and radiation in it. And it came back with three tumors. And they removed those. And then more treatment. And then it came back with another series of tumors, which is what she's treating right now.
Oh, wow.
Yeah, it's been...
So it's been about 4 years of, or 3 to 4 years of her enduring treatment.
The last 18 months, 2 years, feel like it's been intense seizures and just some really difficult things to watch. And I wish I could rewind the time a little bit and react and respond differently, because it's you can't always prepare for fear, and how you respond in the moment is very, you know, it's humbling.
How are your daughters handling it as well, and can you identify with their feelings?
So we have two daughters and a son.
Okay.
They're 16, almost 15 and 13, so we have three kids really close in age, and I'd say they're doing extremely well. And I give credit to Amanda primarily for just trucking along, and she walks 5 miles a day. She, you know, other than her hair loss and, you know, maybe moving a little bit more slowly, she doesn't mope around, and she, you know, she feels crummy after chemo, but she tries to save that rest for when nobody's around, and she's not drawing a lot of, oh, poor me. And so my kids are, you know, they have, when she lost her hair, that was a big moment when, you know, it's probably more on their minds than we give them, you know, than we think, but we're paying close attention to them, and they're doing really well. They're all excelling in their own ways. They're all very different kids. And, you know, it's really drawn our family together, which I think is sort of a natural response, but there's a lot of stress that comes with it, and that doesn't always bring people together.
What do you mean by you think it's a pretty natural response?
Well, people are rallying around somebody they love, and you know, I don't think kids really know how to rally around somebody alone. I know even I was in my early 20s when my mother got cancer, and I didn't know what to do.
Do you have any brothers or sisters?
I have two brothers and a sister.
Older, younger?
I'm in the middle of the boys. And then when my younger brother was 9 or 10, my parents had a girl. So
did you guys rally around your mom or your dad?
You know, I doubt my mom's going to listen to this. I would say we did. She would probably say we didn't.
Well, we have a surprise guest for you. Mom, come back.
Yeah, right. Jerry Springer show.
That's exactly right.
No, I think we were there for her, and we tried to pick up the pieces. She was a single mom of a 10-year-old girl or so. And my dad and my mom were divorced at that point. So we tried. We were there, and we helped. And I don't think we were always as – if I had another take at it, I'd probably do better. when my dad was sick, I was much older. I was, you know, late 30s, had a family of my own. We'd spent a lot of time with him, and we did rally around him. He fought as valiantly as my mother did. He was a little bit more stubborn and got diagnosed later. It was, you know, probably a preventable thing, but it was tough to watch, but it was, I'm glad I was there and I got to see what a real fight looks like. Mm. My dad was a boxing fan too. I've been thinking about him a lot through this. My dad was, you know, I wish I'd gotten to boxing when he suggested I did as a kid.
Yeah. Watching somebody that you love go through any kind of illness, you feel so helpless. And having found boxing, I do love that you found boxing with your daughter, the two of you taking classes together. Do you think that, was it like a kind of a daddy-daughter like bonding? It was something that helped the two of you kind of deal with the reality of what was going on with your wife or what is going on?
Yeah, I think that, you know, with all kids, I find that one-on-one time with all three of them is really important. We're always traveling around in a big clan of people, and it's having three kids close in age, there's always funny dynamics. There's one kid who's not getting enough attention, and that one is going to disrupt whatever you're doing at all costs. And so we found that, and it's not so much we sat around and thought about how we can be better parents, but doing something one-on-one with each of the kids is important. And my daughter, Alexa, she's a great athlete, loves sports, super competitive. And it seemed like the right thing to do. She kept asking me about it. I kept saying, we're going to do it, and I'd forget. And then finally, I was like, you know what? I got to deliver here. And so we called up and we walked in, and she was good. Other than the fact she didn't like that my sweat was coming too close to her, she really enjoyed it. She didn't like holding a heavy bag for me.
What? No? No, she didn't like that?
Yeah. It's part of the sport.
Such is life, right?
That's hysterical.
Yeah, it's just part of the sport. But you feel helpless. You start boxing, and you feel like there's nothing that you can do, but you are doing something. As of this morning, as we're talking, tickets have not gone on sale. But as of this morning, you have raised almost about $108,000.
That's bananas, by the way. We were getting ready for the podcast. Julie and Jordan and I were discussing certain things. I had to tell them, like, is this a misprint? Like, did he raise almost $108,000? They're like, oh yeah, that's what he's raised so far.
That sum is massive. You are doing something in this fight. Is there a specific charity that you are interested in supporting with your fundraising?
There is. It's BCRF, Breast Cancer Research Foundation. And they're a reasonably small organization that focuses on metastatic breast cancer. And I think triple negative metastatic breast cancer, which is what my wife has. And one of our neighbors got Amanda involved. One of our neighbors, her name is Kelly Tuthill. She was a former TV anchor, and she's a breast cancer survivor herself. And she's really taken Amanda under her wing and took Amanda to some of their events. And Amanda felt, you know, I think felt really empowered and had hope coming out of those. And that was no pun, by the way. I didn't even think of that. It wasn't hoping, but she came home with hope that these are some of the brightest minds in the world focused on women like her. And she felt maybe less alone. It's hard to put words in her mouth, but I'm trying to, as she would come home from these events, feeling uplifted. And the drug that she's on, chemotherapy that she's on, is working. It's slowing the spread. It's not spreading, and it's actually shrinking the tumors in her brain. It was developed through BCRF's funding, so it's, you know, I'm sure a lot of other people funded it, but it was one of the drugs that they supported, and so it was an easy decision to make. You know, I wanted this to go to, I didn't want to just go to a general fund. There's so many neat, you know, people who deserve fundraising dollars, but this one's very personal, and I feel like it can make a difference for them. And it goes to Dana-Farber eventually. It's, you know, those dollars go a lot of different places, and I just thought it was a little more personal.
It is going to make a huge impact directly on people's lives. It's an amazing amount of money that you have raised so far. I think it's really a true testament to how much you and your wife, Amanda, are loved. And just, again, I keep going back to feeling helpless, but this, we've seen it over the years. This is a way that people can feel like they're doing something without realizing that they actually are doing something that is going to make a difference in someone's life in an extremely impactful way.
I agree. It really, I, I'm very proud of the amount of money I've raised so far. I don't plan on letting off the throttle. I want to keep going and see if I can. I want to raise every single dollar I can. And I do really think it's a testament to people's love of Amanda and want to get in her fight with her and support her. And it's not an easy thing to do. You could, people say, oh, well, let us know what we can do. Like we'd love to help. And there's really nothing to do, just to support her and love her and be her friend. And this is something that's a little bit more finite and I think gives people a sense of participation. And, you know, it's going to be fun too. I think it's a big part of our recipe is like, have fun. You don't have to focus on the fight all the time. I mean, our house is filled with laughter, regardless of what's going on. And it's, you know, nobody's safe from ridicule. You know, everyone's being made fun of.
That's how my house is.
You know, it's, you know, somebody found a Halloween wig the other day. You know, Amanda is wearing a brown Afro wig around the house the other day. And, you know, she has straight blonde hair normally. So it's, you know, everybody's, you know, we're all in this together. And Haymakers is a great opportunity to make this, you know, make this journey enjoyable.
Julie, mm-hmm. When you and Andrew were sitting down and penned the paper and really making what Haymakers was going to be, did you imagine that there would be such like great numbers like this for fundraising?
When we had our very first event, no, we did not. Our hope was we just wanted to put on an event, raise some money. Mm-hmm. With that said, we ended up writing a check for about $190,000. I've said this a million times, but we grossly underestimated just how much people wanted to see their friends get punched in the face. Because that was a lot of money. And it's continued to grow because of people like Ben who want to have or want to participate in a type of a challenge while fundraising. Ben, like you said, about Pan Mass or all these wonderful, amazing events. And there's so many different ways to fundraise. But it's boxing. And it's a hard sport.
Not Every Fight Ends at the Bell is presented by Haymakers for Hope. To donate, sponsor, attend an event, or better yet, to sign up to be one of our ass-kicking do-gooders, visit haymakersforhope.org. Round two.
Ben, walk us through, I know you started boxing with your daughter. Now, you had mentioned that you were a college athlete. So walk us through what your past sport experience was and how boxing is part of your life.
Yeah, sports have always been a huge part of my life. Conditioning has not been. I was, you know, as a hockey goalie, it was in the mid and late 90s, 93 through 97. And we didn't have nutritionists. And our strength and conditioning coach was also the football strength and conditioning coach. So it was about brute strength and bulk. I would always find some way to do less running and less of the conditioning stuff. And I had aspirations of playing hockey well after college, and it didn't work out. Went into college, NHL prospect. I came out of college not being one. And the emotional sort of acceptance of that was one thing. Losing the physical competition was another. And so I kept playing just because it was fun. And I realized that hockey became fun again when there wasn't some end game. But even as I get older, as I'm pushing 50, hockey is a little harder for me. My hips are junk. I've had back surgery. Hockey hasn't been the same outlet as it was before, but the boxing is replacing that. It's a funny feeling. I couldn't sleep Saturday night because I was thinking about the fight, and it was that good kind of nervousness. Like I haven't had that in 30 years since a hockey game actually mattered and my performance mattered. I liked it. I got up early and I was there and I said, okay. And I wanted to do well. Then when I got to the gym this morning, I realized I got to work a lot harder. And I really, if my mentality had been the same when I was in my late teens and 20s, maybe I would have come out of college still being a prospect. I've matured a lot and know that if you don't put the work in, you're not going to get where you need to get. And so the training has been really humbling. I mean, I never appreciated how much it takes out of you to stand there and throw punches for 30 seconds at a bag, never mind for 2 minutes at somebody who's moving and throwing them back at you. I'm really enjoying the journey. I'm trying to savor it. You know, I don't want May 9th to come and that'd be the end of my relationship with boxing. You know, I don't think I'm going to be jumping in the ring competitively a lot, but I really enjoy pushing myself. I've never felt better as an adult physically. And, you know, there's a lot of things I can say to myself as I'm training and I want to give up that tell me not to give up.
What are those things? What is it that you say to yourself?
The easy one is Amanda's. Like, just work harder. Like, she's working hard. Like, just work harder. it sounds so simple, but it's just, if she can do it, why can't I? And this is one of the other boxers who's gone, you know, gone through the same thing, but, you know, is on the other side of it now. His wife passed away. He and I spoke, and he said, you know, our fight's nothing to compare to theirs. And, you know, that's what I tell myself.
That had to be a very powerful conversation. So there was another boxer, and his wife had died of cancer.
Mm-hmm.
And so the two of you are talking, and yeah, he's on a completely different side of that. How was that conversation?
Well, there was two of them. I had another one yesterday, too. There's two competitors this year who have lost their wives to cancer. And it was, it's tough talking about it now.
Take your time.
You know, I'm grateful to have their perspective, but I don't want to be in their shoes.
Yeah.
And, you know, yeah, this is important. We're raising a lot of money, but it doesn't really change our fight. You know, it gives us purpose. It gives us something to focus on, a distraction, maybe, although it's not really a distraction. It's just more of a positive focus. But when the bell rings, it's like your tagline says, the podcast is called, like, the fight keeps going. And like, this might save somebody down the road. You know, these dollars are going to save somebody down the road. And that's motivation, but it's, you know, we're all fairly selfish people. I want Amanda to be better now. So it was a humbling conversation. And, you know, I give these guys credit. You know, it's to show up, even though that, you know, he has kids and he's a single dad. This isn't, you don't just show up to the gym every once in a while and do this. This is a big commitment. And I give everybody a lot of credit for putting their lives on hold to go do this, because it is, it's really important.
Yeah, it's a huge undertaking. Sometimes people underestimate the amount of work that goes into preparing themselves physically and mentally for 6 minutes of boxing. 6 minutes. When you break it down like that, think about it. You started training for May 9th in, say, beginning of February. So 4 months. You're in the gym how many days a week?
Try to be there 3 to 4. I mean, Sione would like me there 5 to 6.
Yeah. That sounds like Sione.
And what I like when we get in there, it's on. You shut your brain off and you go. When you're saying, like, what are those things you say to yourself? I've had to say them less lately because I think I'm maturing or sort of developing mentally. I'm able to, you know, channel something that I used to be able to do easily when I was playing competitively, where I could, the surroundings were meaningless. I didn't even know what was going on around it. I was so focused on what's in front of me. That muscle memory is coming back. And it sounds kind of trite. And I'm sure if my friends are listening, they're like, oh, God, Ben, like, give us a break. But going in there, shutting off the world and pushing myself further than I actually think I can go, I'm really glad I'm experiencing it. And I'm glad that I'm pushing myself. I think it's coming at the right point in my life. It's giving me purpose. It's giving me confidence that I can actually get through something very difficult. The boxing metaphor on life is, you know, maybe it's just I'm so focused on boxing lately, but I've been thinking a lot about that. You know, like all of these different sports metaphors we talk about. I'm like, I don't know, boxing's a pretty good one. Boxing pretty much covers it all.
Yeah. Boxing, some people want to fight against it, but you unfortunately have to get comfortable with being uncomfortable. It is there that you find that in order to grow as a fighter, which also translates to growing as a person, growing as a boxer, you need to find that line, the threshold of where you're going to start to get uncomfortable, toe that line, and then jump as far over that friggin' line as you possibly can. And that is where you're going to see that growth as an athlete, but also as a person, because you have to dig so, so deep with boxing. And it's such a challenge. And I applaud you for taking this on because, like I said, it's such a huge commitment. People, you know, you get to the gym, especially with Sione, like it's like punching in a time card. You're there to work. You're there to put in your work. And there's a work, life, training, fundraising, family balance. And that's a lot of juggling. That's a lot of balls to keep up in the air.
Sione and Kathy, his partner at the gym, they get it. And, you know, I'm not just a haymaker's, you know, representation of them. It's not for their ego. I mean, when I walk in that door, I know they care about my success for what it does for me. And the relationship is, that's a very special one with Sione and with Kathy and just the other folks in the gym who are working out there. A lot of them just for fitness, but some of them are former haymakers or gold gloves boxers who are just continuing to stay involved. And it's the brotherhood is really appealing. You know, that fellowship that comes where, you know, you're all in it together. And, you know, that saying to Sione yesterday when I was warming up, like I hear that bell in my sleep on the 5 minute countdown clock. You know, I literally, as I'm falling asleep at night, I hear that, like, oh, that's still 30 seconds. Like, I got to keep going. It's been a fun challenge. And it's been, like I said, humbling is the easiest word, because it's, you know, I don't care how good a shape you think you're in or how tough you are. And I'm sure there's some street fighters who would make it, you know, through the second round.
Yes. I've had quite a few conversations with people who, at the very start of training, I had one guy one time tell me, oh, I'm not worried about the conditioning. I do CrossFit 5 days a week. And I said, well, CrossFit, that's great. CrossFit, I couldn't do CrossFit 5 days a week, but, you know, I can box about 8 rounds because I'm trained to box. I'm not trained to do CrossFit. And about 2 weeks into training, I got a message from him that said, I was wrong. It's a hard sport. And one of the wonderful things, and you touched upon it, about boxing that some people don't know because they haven't, you know, boxing has this sort of like intimidating factor to it. And people who haven't, you know, stepped into a gym and assimilated with the crowd, is a side effect of a boxing gym, like you had mentioned, is the community that comes along with it and the brotherhood and the sisterhood. It is so profound. And it's crazy when you think about it, because you're going in that ring alone. You know, your coach is standing there, but they're not in there. You're the one fighting. And yet at the same time, you're carrying every person who either did drills with you or who sparred you, who smacked you in the mouth. You're carrying those people in there with you because they got you ready for battle. And it's for those 6 minutes. And you're in a great gym. That is, over the years, they have such a wonderful, supportive community. And it's truly a testament to what they've built.
Yeah, everybody's always popping in to say hi and, you know, knocking on the windows, waving. And so people love them. And they, you know, I can see why. I'm part of that group who loves them.
And Ben, what would you tell someone right now who's listening, a guy or a girl in their 40s, they have kids, they have a job. What would you tell them in terms of if they're questioning whether or not they can do this?
They can do it. I mean, that's all there is to it. We all can do it. And it's, how bad do you want it? And, you know, how comfortable are you being uncomfortable? I think that's, you know, like Julie said, it's very comforting to know that I can get through the discomfort. And I think that's what I would say to somebody else, is challenge yourself to do this. There's a million reasons not to, but, you know, maybe you'll have that one reason that you do it. And I don't think there's anybody out there who doesn't have that reason. Everybody's touched by this in a very personal way, no matter where you live or who you are, or how old you are. But, you know, I just think this personal journey for me is so rewarding, and you'll find something out about yourself that you'll be glad that you found it out.
And Ben, just to put you on the spot a little bit, what have you learned about yourself?
That I can work harder. I always considered myself a hardworking person, but that I never really pushed myself. I never really got comfortable in the discomfort. And, you know, even when I'm training now, would I train as hard if Sione weren't there leaning on me? The answer is absolutely unequivocally no. We were on vacation a couple weeks ago, and I said, okay, I'll just do an hour, 3 or 4 days a week of what I do with Sione. Mm-hmm. And there's no way I was going to do that. So I had him on FaceTime and just had propped him up in the gym, and I did it. And I worked as hard as I work at home. I found that I can work harder, and that sometimes I need some help finding that extra gear and some motivation, but I'll never be disappointed if I work a little harder.
It's funny. I saw your halfway spar. You have the Fitness Advantage fitness level. You know, everyone that fights out of Fitness Advantage is always in incredible shape. You have that. You also fought with, if you had a purpose or a mission, you weren't just sparring to spar. It was as if you had a purpose and a mission.
I want to win. I want to win. I want the MGM to be filled with people who are cheering me on, and people I know, and people I don't want to let down. I want to win. I want to make people proud of me. I want Amanda to be proud. I want my opponent to know that I'm in this for real. This isn't just an activity. I'm doing this. This is very personal. I'm fighting as if Amanda's in there with me.
Not Every Fight Ends at the Bell is presented by Haymakers for Hope. Did you know there's more to Haymakers than just boxing? We also have opportunities for you to lace up your sneakers and run a marathon with Team Haymakers. Or grab your clubs and play in one of our golf tournaments. Visit haymakersforhope.org for more. Round three.
I want to circle back for 1 second regarding fundraising. You know, I have a lot of conversation with potential Haymaker boxers, and they're always concerned about fundraising. What have you done, or is there anything, a tip you can give someone who's thinking of fundraising and not sure, you know, what the right way to go about it is?
I've done fundraising before for different organizations. I've played in charity hockey. I just took a very genuine approach to people, and I didn't send out a big blanket email to all my contacts. I just asked people. You know, I did sort of groups at a time. I did my, you know, some of my hockey friends, some work friends, and clients, this and that. But I just, come join this fight with me. It's fun. And like Julie said, one of my lines is, even if you just want to see me get punched in the face, like, your money's still good too. And, you know, it's such a unique thing. It's not, you know, a walk or a run or a bike, you know, or a golf tournament. People love Amanda. So this is an easy ask. And, you know, I'm fortunate enough that my, you know, a lot of my friends have been very successful and are very generous. And I just asked people, and they were more than happy to participate. And, you know, I've got a bunch more that have been, you know, focused on other things, but I'll get to them too. But I would tell people, just do it. Like, just don't be afraid of the fundraising. Everybody's going to hit their goal.
Yeah, there's something very raw about it. It's different from a race or a walk or anything like that. There's just something that really connects with people when it's boxing. It's someone literally fighting to raise money for people that they love, or whatever someone's motivation is, even if it is purely for the competition, they're still going to raise money by boxing, by putting themselves out there on a stage and fighting somebody hand to hand. So it's people come out of the woodwork. There's just something kind of romantic or that people love about boxing, and just have a friend that, you know, like you said, you're 49 and you're just, did you ever think that at 49 years old, you'd be stepping in the ring in front of about 2,000 people at MGM at Fenway Park?
No, I actually think in the last, probably a year plus ago, I remember saying to somebody in a conversation, I think I've probably thrown and received my last punch, because in what other situation am I going to throw a punch at this age? You know, like, yeah. I'm not getting into street fights. You know, it's ironic. You know, I never thought that I would be doing this, but I'm really glad I did. It's just that adrenaline rush of just going in there sparring with the guys and women too. There's some women who I thought maybe I should take it lightly, and she caught me with a jab in the chin. You know, she could take me out as soon as she wants. She's letting me stay in here. So it's a fun way to learn a lot about yourself and to not take yourself too seriously, because there's always somebody who's tougher and a better boxer.
Yeah. So as of right now, you're halfway through training. So you've got just about two months left until event.
Sioni told me I'm just starting.
You're just starting.
Yeah.
There's a lot of truth in that.
There's a lot of truth in that.
I don't want to frighten you, but there's a little.
I'm here now. I'm being recorded. I can't run now.
What are you looking forward to over the next 2 months? Is there a goal that you have set for yourself that you're hoping to achieve? Is there something that you're just zoned in on and focused on? Because you've already out of the gate, you've fundraised such a massive amount of money, and it's bananas to me that you still have 2 months left to go. So I don't know if there's anything that you have in your sights.
Fundraising wise, I want to keep going strong. I didn't get to this number and say, okay, now I got that taken care of. Right. I want to keep going. I want this to be a successful event. And if I can have a role in that, from a fundraising standpoint, I'm doing that. From a overall standpoint, pushing 50 is a big milestone. And I want to get to the point where I feel like I've taken my body back, and I'm getting there. What I tell younger people is, it's a lot harder to get in shape than it is to stay in shape. So I would have done things a little bit differently, but I want to start taking, have a little gratitude for being able-bodied and not to take it for granted, and to get into shape and to be in shape and to live a little bit of a different lifestyle going forward. Because I think it's no guarantees. And I like the way I feel, and I know that I'm not there yet.
Ben, if you could tell someone who's about to embark on this four-month journey, if you could tell them just one thing, what would you tell them?
Keep your chin down. Maybe that wouldn't be the one thing, but keep your chin down. You can achieve way more than you think you can. And that counts for on a Wednesday morning at the gym, or, you know, over the entire continuum of this Haymakers journey. And regardless of how the judges hold the scores at the end, just in the gym yesterday during media day, like, I was just scanning the room and just sort of soaking it all in. Like, all of these guys are putting their work in. You don't know anything about them from their headshots. And then you see them all hitting the pads with Henry, like, they're all snapping those punches off and, you know, making that heavy bag move. And like these guys are all working hard, and it's every single one of them is doing more than they thought they could, as far as I can tell.
Yeah, it's everyone, different walks of life, different ages, but you guys all have that one same goal, which is to raise a bunch of money to make a difference. And it was really inspiring to be in the room yesterday with all of you. What a great group of guys. Everyone was just really laid back and chill and chatting and just having a great time. There was, you know, sometimes people, our opponents, are, they don't want to talk and this and that. Everyone was just chatting away. It really just had a great vibe. I'm really looking forward to seeing you and the rest of the crew in the ring.
To Julie's point too, it really is a great group. Usually on media day, there's at least two mics that just, like, you guess it just gets a little overbearing or a little too much. And it seemed everybody was cool. Everybody did their work. And from what I saw, there's going to be some really good fights come May 9th. It just looked really interesting and really good.
Yeah, the personalities were great. There was a lot of laughter there, but also it should go, you know, should mention that, I mean, you guys put on an unbelievably organized, well-oiled machine. Clearly not your first rodeo, and I can't remember his name, but the director in charge of all of the stuff, he was right on. He was funny, and you know, he knew, you know, how to corral, you know, 30-something egos to do what they need to do. And it was a really fun day. I didn't know what to expect going in. And, you know, having Ryan, who's training with FA with me, you know, having sort of a buddy there to start made it more comfortable. But just, you know, he and I bonded over the day and just really enjoyed, you know, talking to people. And it was a really great day. So I give you guys a lot of credit for having it, honing your trade really well.
Well, thank you. What you guys are doing is so extraordinary that we need to give you a little takeaway so you have some badass video, for an intro video for you to, as a keepsake. So it's the least we can do. And Rob does an amazing job and makes everybody just look so awesome. He and his team are incredible. So Fight Night will be a lot of fun, very special. And we're close, 2 more months.
Yeah, 60 days.
Ben, one more question for you. Why should someone sign up to fight in Haymakers?
It's an honor to be able to go do this. It's, you know, someone should sign up because they should. This is something you want to be part of. It's such a, like Julie said, it's such a unique experience, and to have the opportunity to participate in it, be forever connected to it. You know, I was talking to Jordan about her experience, Mark, and one of my friends and neighbors, Father Frank Prawl, you know, having this connection to these people, it's a really special thing. And I don't want to wish time away. I'm afraid of these next 2 months of training, but come May 10th, I'll be an alum. So I really want to savor this part of the journey. But after that, that's with me forever. And I think that it's being part of something really important and special and unique.
Tickets are on sale now if you're interested in purchasing a ticket and attending the event on Thursday, May 9th at the MGM Music Hall at Fenway. You can go onto haymakersforhope.org and purchase tickets through there. If you are interested in supporting Ben and Amanda in their fight, you can also find Ben's Fighter page and make a donation through there under Ben Heller, also on haymakersforhope.org. Ben, thank you so much for being here and sharing your story. And we are forever in your and Amanda's corner. And we're just very appreciative for you just to walk us through a day in the life right now. So we appreciate you.
Well, I really appreciate being a part of this organization. And thanks for your time here today, shining some light on our journey and, you know, for founding this organization that's helping so many people like Amanda and me and people we all love.
Thank you for taking the time to listen. We're grateful for your support.
If you enjoyed this episode, please follow the podcast and tell a friend. To donate, sponsor, attend an event, or better yet, sign up to fight TKO cancer, visit haymakersforhope.org.
Not Every Fight Ends at the Bell is presented and produced by Haymakers for Hope in partnership with Studio Pod Media. Our producers are former fighters Jordan McMillan and Julian Lewis.
I'm Julie Kelly.
And I'm Todd Buster Paris.
You've been listening to Not Every Fight Ends at the Bell.